You're now live.
Okay, welcome back everybody for Not Knife Learning. This is Mordechai Plobsker. Welcome back everybody for another night of learning. This is Mordechai Plobsker. Sorry if the connection is not so hot. I'm actually driving on my way back to Brooklyn. Today is Mother's Day, so a special expression of gratitude to all the wonderful mothers that juggle family and life and work and make our home so Baruch Hashem busy with the voices of children and of course the voices of adults. Were it not for the mothers, there wouldn't be much of us around here. So special thanks to everybody. Special Mother's Day thanks. Also, a special expression of gratitude to Rabbi Jonathan Gerwitz, a good friend of Ari Perlman, and welcome back to the Shir. And also, just wanted to pitch Ari Perlman's son CD. Miracles is just a fabulous CD. It could be downloaded on iTunes. It also, if you'd like to purchase a copy, you can please contact Ari Perlman at 718-374-1103. Again, 718-374-1103. His son, David Perlman, put out a CD, and it is absolutely phenomenal. I encourage everybody to get a copy, especially that song, Kaylee, is really one of my favorites, but all of them are gems. And I think everybody will be inspired listening to David Perlman. He's really fantastic. We've been talking about Parshas Emor the past couple nights, and tonight I'd like to try to transition a little bit deeper. Tonight's going to be a focus and a conversation about the Kedushas Levi and his approach of the Pesukim where it says, Emor Elo Kohanim B'nei Aaron. And so we learn something valuable from the very fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to B'nei Aaron, and there's a lesson that we can learn from this. Specifically, the children of Aaron were charged with the aspects of certain rites and rituals and daily life inside the Mishkan. And the Torah, we can ask, why was it specific to that it has to say B'nai Aaron? It could just say, just as easily said, Emor El Kahanim, speak to the Kahanim. So the Kedushas Levi picks up on this, and he says that Aaron HaKohen had great, great holiness. He worked on himself day and night. And so the Kedusha translated over into the children, Nadav and Avihu, Eleazar and Itamar, grew in the house of Aaron HaKohen, and so they were all imbued with his Kedusha. However, one should not take it upon himself or think that just because your father was a great tzaddik, that all of a sudden you are a great tzaddik. Explain to the Kedushas Levi that when someone works hard for something, Yagia Katacha V'tocha L'Ashrecha V'tov Loch, that a person works hard, Ashrecha B'olam HaZeh, the Tov Loch L'Olam Haba, explains the Medrash, that it's good for you in this world and it'll be better for you in the next world. That's for people that work hard, and so therefore they have something to be proud about, that they've accomplished something with their efforts, as opposed to somebody who just simply inherits it just because his father was a great tzaddik, or just because his father was a very wealthy person, and he does nothing in order to build on the success of the parent. And tonight's Sfiras Omer, those of us who are in Denver, and we know we have a good friend, Jake Wyman, who just dialed in and is recording tonight's Shia. Last night was Lamed Vav Tzadikim, for those who didn't count yet out in Denver, because I'm not sure if the time zone is just right or if they're preparing to do so. Tonight is the next night, following which that would be Gevura should be Yesod, and that is this is the Midah of Aaron. Yesod is Aaron because we know that the Sphiros have different characteristics and combinations. There's Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Aaron, David. And so now we are in the realm of Aaron HaKohen, and so next week we're going to get into the realm of David HaMelech. So we have Gevura Shebi Yesod, which is Yitzchak Aaron. So Yitzchak Aaron is a very powerful combination, because it also reminds me of the Rav Yitzchak Aaron Singer from Vyasa Shul, passed away in 2000, December 2000. He was a man of great stature. But the name Yitzchak denotes Gevura. It also denotes Yira. And Aharon imbued himself with similar levels of Ve'ahavta Recha Kamocha, and this was a person who was Oev Shalom Berodev Shalom. If you put the two together, you get somebody who is both fearful of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yet warm and kind enough to his fellow man to increase the Shalom the Ava, the Acha, the Shalom Vareos that we all have to increase upon in Klal Yisrael at large. So explains the Kedusha Levi that when one simply looks at the Yichas, Yichas Atmo is really what a person should be worried about, he should be thinking about, and not just simply the fact that he comes from a great line of tzaddikim. He has to work upon himself in order to measure up to where his parents and grandparents and the Alta Zadis, where they all came from. I can just speak to my father, Olav Shalom, who, you know, told me, he says, Yichas, Yichas. We can talk about Yichas. You know, your great uncle Charlie, Yechiel, he became very wealthy when he came over to the United States in 1907. He started a ladies' a garment factory, and he employed the rest of his brothers. There were 12 siblings. And so he donated $10,000 in 1939 in the Polish mission to save 137 Jews, and they came over with travel visas and passports and food provisions for their journey over to the United States. And when he passed away in 1957, there were three rows of cars on Stillwell Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, filling up the street in order to show, you know, homage and to show respect. And every time these people would say a bracha, obviously he would get some schos. My father, when he wasn't so well at the end of his life, he told me that he inherited money from his mother from the inheritance, and $18,000, which was the sum amount, he gave all that away to the Breslov Research Institute, and that was able to publish volume one. They approached the Arya Kaplan, and we all know with the famous Arya Kaplan, he said, I don't have the years to put into this. This is back in 1982, and he passed away in 1984. So he said, I need 10 years. I don't have that time. And he was a tzaddik, obviously, he was able to see his own future, unfortunately. He didn't have those years. But 30 years later, every 2 years, they published another Sefer, and then they published Volume 15, which is the sum of the Likutei Maharan. And so my father would tell me, Yichas, we Baruch Hashem, there's Yichas. However, Yichas Atzmo, Mordechai, what are you doing for Yichas? What are you doing for Klal Yisrael? And I was always very frightened by this statement because I didn't know what to answer. Where am I? Who am I? But everyone has that potential to inspire other people and to give back to Klal Yisrael incrementally, small pieces at a time. And so therefore, this is the lesson that we learn. Emor el kahanim. It's not just simply enough that I'm telling the kahanim. I'm really speaking to Bnei Aaron. Says the Kedusha Levi, that is the emphasis on that pasuk. Bnei Aaron refers to where the dialogue really begins and where it really continues. It continues with Bnei Aaron explaining to them they have a mission to accomplish. And that mission is not complete until they improve upon themselves and make themselves into leaders and make themselves into men of great stature. And so therefore, the Pasuk says, Emor el kahanim, v'amarat lehav, you should speak to them in Lashon Raka, that as much as they have all of these responsibilities, they can't just say that they inherited it, so therefore they know that it's coming from on high, but rather they have to take it upon themselves. Kedusha Levi actually takes this level, takes this midah, this thought process, and one step further. I know we have another minute or two, but I wanted to take it to one level higher, and that is, one can argue that if I were able to eat kachem the same way that the kahanim were able to eat the kachem, wouldn't I become a holier Jew? Wouldn't I become infused with all of that holiness? Why are they preventing me from achieving greatness if only they would just let me eat that kachem that the kahanim are allowed to eat? Explains the Kedusha Levi on this thought, which is this is the lesson that we gave over in Shabbos in Rabbi Rakeach Shul, that the understanding over here is that there are two types of people. There are people that are able to understand the culture of the king, and there are people who do not understand how to handle themselves in the presence of a king. Some people may not use a fork and a knife. So, for example, in the presence of a king, obviously you need to have manners, you need to have decorum. So that the kahanim, unlike people who are not well-versed, are not privy to go inside the Chadri HaMelech, which is the inner sanctum of the king, and behave in a certain way. The kahanim, however, are given that responsibility, so they're trained from the get-go on how to behave themselves within the Kachim so that they can interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a pleasant manner, unlike others who seem to take it upon themselves responsibilities that are not befitting to them. And so therefore, when it comes time for them to act in front of the king, they do not act in the proper manner. And that could create a great, the king could obviously become very aggravated and upset. You know, you don't understand the protocol, you don't understand what needs to get done. We all know that there are 11 spices, and when the karbanos were brought, if there was one spice that was missing, the person was chayav misa. So why would a person jump into something that he's not well versed in and claim to be an expert? Krishna Sahib even says that there are people who say that they learn Torah, it's so great, but then they realize that they only scratch the surface of the fingernail or the toenail of a great tzaddik who's been learning even higher levels than that person. The person should never use his intellect in a form of a gaiva. Really what it comes down to is the gaiva. A person should be humble and recognize that certain people have certain responsibilities, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in the way that Hashem made us, so therefore we have to operate within our limits. And as such, when we do operate within our limits, then we can achieve great heights. Obviously, we have to keep on pushing ourselves. But we recognize that not all of us are Kohanim, and those of us that are fortunate to be Kohanim, they have not only that response, they not only have the special, unique qualities that are inherent within a Kohen, that he's charged with giving over the brachos, but also the Gemara tells us that if a Kohen were to, you know, become intoxicated, or if he were to have some form in his heart, some hatred toward a fellow Jew, he's not allowed to do duchening. Imagine that there's only one Kohen in the shul, and he's in a bitter fight with somebody else, and he gets up to do duchening. The Gemara tells us that this is very problematic, and so therefore we have to know that there are limitations, but also there are great responsibilities. And so we have to be thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that Hashem has given us and all that Hashem has not given us. We have to be thankful for the blessings, and we have to be thankful for all the things that we feel are coming to us. But at the same time, we have to recognize and take a step back and know our own limitations and operate within that parameter. And so this is the Midah. This is the lesson that we learn. Emor Ela Kahanim B'nei Aharon. Teach this over to the next generation. The Kohanim are well-versed. They know the protocol. However, the children, simply because they inherit something, it's not just yichas, it's yichas atzmo. It's what are you doing for Klal Yisrael? How are you inspiring Klal Yisrael? How are you lifting other people up? We all learn this from the message of the two birds. There's a din b'cheshbon, as we learn in Pirkei Avos, and with this we'll close out, that we have a din b'cheshbon, as we explained the other night, that the first din is that the bird has to cease, meaning that bird is killed. Why? Because the Lashon Hara. The second bird, we take that wings of the beautiful white bird, we dip it in the first bird, and we let it fly away. It ends up on some perch. Someone is learning Torah on a park bench, and he looks up and he sees a beautiful bird, and he says, "My goodness, look at this beautiful white bird. Why in the world does it have red blotches of blood all over its wings? It does not be fitting." And we learn from that lesson, when a person looks at that bird, he'll remember the cheshbon, which is, what could you have been doing while the person was saying Lashon Hara? While you were listening to Lashon Hara, or while you were saying Lashon Hara, you could have been inspiring another Jew. You could have been lifting somebody up. You could have been giving over the Mesoras, Havasena, Biadena, how beautiful it is. And we should struggle with this, but we should learn by example about how we can make the world a much better and refined place. Again, a special thank you to all the mothers for making the world a better, refined place. We wouldn't be able to function without them. We're very appreciative for all the hard work that they do. And especially a special thanks to Rabbi Jonathan Gurwitz. Thank you so much for everything that you do for Aryeh and your friendship. And, of course, a special shout-out to David Perlman and the Perlman Shpacha for releasing a fabulous, amazing CD. I encourage everybody to download it by iTunes, or please contact Arya Perlman directly by his cell phone, 718-374-1103, 718-374-1103. This is Mordechai Plotzker at the right off the BQE, wishing everyone the Brooklyn Queens Expressway, that is, wishing everyone a Brooklyn learning. Please join us tomorrow evening, and we'll continue this discussion of Parshas Emor.